I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Alrighty, what's happening? How are you today? TK and Tierney, company for the TK and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios, who found the better way to mortgage so you can focus on making your new house home. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage Wednesday around the country. TK and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM, Channel 206 on Twitter, at Tiki and Tierney, at Tiki Barber, at Brandon Tierney, 1-855-212-4227. You know, from a fairly innocuous NBA game,
I know,
we sure have a lot of residual chatter, a lot of complaining. Double overtime, Spurs by a deuce, 135-133. I got one question.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell are the Rockets crying about? I mean, I know quite literally what they're crying about. The play when James Harden had a breakaway, went for the dunk, the net was a little twisted, it clearly went down,
yep.
It ricocheted out, they didn't count the basket, they went for the review, they still didn't get it right. There's a look at it. But I got news for the Rockets. Do they understand? Do they understand what the score was when James Harden hit slash missed that dunk?
Mm-hmm.
The score was 104-89. Them.
Well, 102. Because
pardon me, 102.
Because it didn't count.
Correct.
It would have been 104.
102-89 with 7 minutes and 47 seconds to go. And they lose the game. So I don't want to hear any complaints from the Rockets.
Yeah. You know,
be quiet.
It's interesting because you listen to the commentary around this. Well, if James Harden had made that dunk, they would have won the game. No, they wouldn't have. Anything could have happened.
Stop.
Maybe the Spurs take an extra three-pointer and knock two or three three-pointers and knock those down and find a way to come back. The Spurs were coming back in this game. From that point on, because up until that point, the Spurs were playing lethargic.
Mm-hmm.
And even the pass that James Harden intercepted to go down court and dunk on, it was like a lazy. It was like a 40-foot pass that he just lazily threw. James Harden intercepted it. The guy who was intended for it just kind of was like, okay, whatever. We're down by 15. Doesn't matter, right? And then that interestingly flipped the script.
It did.
From that point on, I mean, obviously it had started before that, but from that point on, it was like the Houston Rockets were playing distracted and the San Antonio Spurs were on a mission. They're like, dude, we have a chance now.
I know.
And they let them hang around and ultimately went to double overtime. James Harden, by the way, had multiple chances in overtime and in double overtime to seal the game, and he didn't do it. And now, after the fact, because forget what happened in the game, after the fact, the Houston Rockets are trying to protest it and have the win awarded to them.
It's ridiculous.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
I'm going to play something from D'Antoni in a minute.
If there was 5 seconds left in the game and it was a one possession game,
maybe.
I would feel for them.
I agree with you.
I'm like, you had 7.5 minutes to not mess it up.
You're up by 22 points in the second half. Stop crying.
I agree.
Get a defensive stop. And by the way, James Harden got called with two offensive charges at the end of the game.
Yep.
And all right, the last one with 0.08, I believe it was, when the whistle occurred. Was it a charge? I believe it was. Was there possibly a foul before it, Murray?
Yeah.
Yeah, but
it's subjective,
it
right?
It is, but look at the clip. James Harden rolls his body into Murray, and Murray kind of clips him on the side a little bit. That's a good non-call. I don't want to hear it. I do want to hear from Mike D'Antoni, who was anxious to talk after the game, as you would expect, but a whole lot of excuses from the Rockets. Dial it down, guys. Come on.
What was the explanation that you got from the refs on that?
How long does the after shows go? I have no idea. I heard that they said that the ball hit James and went back through, so it was goaltending on James. So I said, I challenged that. Then I didn't get a response. And another guy said, it wasn't goaltending, just went out of bounds on us. And I said, well, I challenged that. And they go, can't do that. I don't know. I didn't get an explanation. Man, I got nothing. I can't tell you.
You can challenge goaltending.
You can challenge goaltending, out of bounds. You can challenge all that.
So now instant replay and all the bad stuff that comes with it has officially infiltrated the NBA.
Well, that's why
like the NFL.
BT, what was it, 2 weeks ago? I said, replay? Just get rid of it. Well, certain things, but for basketball, you don't need replay in basketball. There's too many possessions. The game moves too fast, and I think that's actually the bigger story, the bigger issue. We're not buying the Houston Rockets' case that they deserve to get the W or to go replay the last 7 minutes and 53 seconds of this game. Like, come on, seriously?
Come on.
I mean, it sounds cool, but no, it's never going to happen.
Never.
But the larger issue, BT, is replay.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not it's meant for the NBA, the coaches seemingly hate it. We heard Brad Stevens. No, we didn't hear, but we kind of read his lips, cussing at refs, saying, I'm blank and done with this stuff, mm-hmm. because he dislikes it so much. Doc Rivers could give it or take it. And they can't really criticize it because they'll get fined for it. They kind of know how to use it, but they don't really know how to use it. The bigger issue is replay. Is replay going to ultimately be more disruptive in the NBA than it is beneficial? And it seems to be that way because coaches aren't buying in.
I got to tell you what, the more I think... On the pragmatic level,
mm-hmm.
you're absolutely right. It's not reliable.
No, the refs don't even know what they're doing when they go in. It's not even not in the hood. We see it.
It's not predictable.
Exactly.
It's not consistent. But you know what it does do?
What's
Grows that? A little conversation back to the sport.
That's a good point.
I mean, think about this. I'm sure maybe. If this doesn't happen, and whether the Rockets hang on and they win by a deuce, or the Spurs win by a deuce, which they did, single overtime, double overtime, whatever, this may have been a passing reference in inbounds, out of bounds. Maybe it would have been something in the blast.
Yeah, been something we laughed about.
Did you see that last night? The Rockets,
yes.
And the Spurs, pretty crazy stuff. Yeah, next. But this was. This garners, I'm not saying it's the end of the world because it's really not, but it garners a lot more attention mm-hmm. on all the shows than an otherwise relatively meaningless game in early part of the season-ish would render. So if I'm the NBA, while my brain is saying maybe I want to get away from this, maybe the other part of my brain is saying, I don't know, clicks aren't bad. Did you see the ratings? We told you about the ratings yesterday. ESPN's down 20%,
mm-hmm.
TNT is down 23%, and the RSNs, the regional sporting networks, are down 13%.
Yeah.
That's like MSG, Yes, NESN, Comcast, Fox Sports, the Mavericks and the Pistons are on. So the NBA's hemorrhaging.
Yeah.
Forget about what happened in China. Nobody's even watching the product this year. Maybe this is good.
I heard it is good to an extent because we're talking about it.
That's
it's
what I
making
mean.
Us have a conversation about James Harden, who by the way, scored 50 points.
Yeah.
I mean, it does this at will. It's like he doesn't have to try to get the 50 at this point after scoring 60 in three quarters the other day. But, BT, I think I heard an interesting explanation or excuse. I don't know. I don't know if it's explanation or an excuse. They're two very different things, explanations and excuses, about why the ratings are down.
Okay.
And I wonder if you buy it.
Go ahead.
All right. It was stated that the reason that the ratings are down is because all of the stars, at least the ones that we want to watch,
mm-hmm.
are on the West Coast now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So LeBron James is a Laker, and Kawhi Leonard is a Clipper, even Paul George, that duo is out there. James Harden, whether you love him or hate him, he's entertaining as hell. He's a West Coast-ish type of player.
Mm-hmm.
And those games start late.
Yeah.
So they're like 9:30, and some are 10 o'clock tips. The Warriors we're not paying attention to anymore, but still, the better teams are on the Western side. And we always talk about this East Coast bias,
mm-hmm.
but the stars that are on the East Coast, we're not necessarily tuning in. Like, I don't know if the nation is tuning in to see what Joel Embiid
or Giannis
is doing. Like, they like those guys,
sure.
and they know that they're great players, and they're... if they do happen to be playing their team, it's like, oh, we got to take on one of these top stars. But they're not going to go out of their way to watch them,
uh-huh.
because they're not like national stars. The national stars are all on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
It was just an interesting illumination,
theory
of what potentially is causing this dip.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to see LeBron. If you're a LeBron fan or not, you're going to kind of watch him play,
mm-hmm.
especially now that he's with Anthony Davis. Kawhi Leonard, same thing. Even if you didn't love him or had an affinity for him when he's with the San Antonio Spurs, the orchestration of his exit,
mm-hmm.
and then the ascent to Toronto where he took him to a title, it made him a national figure.
No doubt.
But now he's on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the guys that you would kind of off-the-cuff watch,
yep.
those games aren't starting until much, much later.
I got to tell you, it's somewhat of a plausible theory.
Yeah.
I can pick it apart in one aspect, which I will in a moment, but it would be disingenuous to completely disregard that as a possibility when we've been saying for years the NBA is a star-driven league.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
there's got to be a correlation
that's
there.
That's right.
If it's a star-driven league, well, then the ratings, they you know, that matches. So I believe that is maybe even more than partially driving this, number one. I do think the style of play is unappealing. Stylistically,
no
the NBA
it.
Is tough to watch these days.
Yeah.
The threes, the constant procession to the free throw line, no defense, it's sloppy. And the other thing is, what a good test for that theory will be when Zion comes back.
Uh-huh.
Even though he's not necessarily on the West Coast at all,
right.
but he's in the Western Conference, and a lot of his marquee games will be against Western Conference foes.
Mm-hmm.
That will be on the national circuit, illuminated
right.
for the. So I want to see if there's a spike there, and if there's not a spike there, then it might disprove that theory.
That's right.
But I think there's a lot of truth from what you just said.
Yeah, and to your point about the game not being that enjoyable to watch, you brought this up yesterday, and I was listening but not, like, fully processing what you were saying.
You're going to tune me out?
No, not that. But, like,
what does that mean? So I was listening, but I was...
Because
I was
you were talking about a PER. You were talking about Luka's PER.
Which is 34-ish.
Which is 33.8.
Almost
33.1.
After last night, it went up, though.
It probably did. So 33.5, whatever it may be. Giannis's is 33.8. So I know he has the number one PER in the league right now. Luka's number two at 33.5 or 6 or whatever it may be. And James Harden is third on the list at 32 and change. Right? Those PERs are the highest in the history of the game.
Yeah, there's never been a PER of 35.
Exactly. And so
for a whole season.
You got three guys who were besting the highest PER ever. Now there's lots of basketball to play, but I don't see James Harden not scoring, 50 points a game going forward. I don't see Luka all of a sudden saying, I think I'm going to pull back and score, 20 instead of 30. And it's triple doubles. I don't need those anymore. We don't need those.
He's
to
just
win.
Getting started.
Exactly. He's just getting started. It's only going to go higher.
Yep.
Giannis is the same way, especially with Chris Middleton banged up and Malcolm Brogdon gone. He's got a guy that's got to score.
He's the man.
His PER is going to keep climbing. So.
And there's guys, by the way, who are below those three
that's right.
that are also trending in that direction,
that's right.
too.
And so NBA, and again, I don't love the PER stat because I don't think it doesn't encompass the full game. Like, are you playing defense?
But
at
it
all?
Encompasses a whole lot more than points per game,
hollow. But that's primarily what it is, and it's telling that there's three guys that are besting the best ever PER. That's Wilt Chamberlain, by the way, the best ever PER of our full season. There's three guys that are already above it and likely trending higher.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting observation. I don't think it's dissimilar from years past when we've had, and I don't even mean McGuire and Sosa when they were going bonkers and bonds with the home runs and the steroids, but even last year with the juiced up baseball, the seams,
the home run records,
So the velocity was obviously just cutting through the air. The lower the seams, obviously, the quicker. It's just pure physics. It's sheer physics. Alonso very well might be a legitimate masher.
Yeah.
Is he 50-plus home run masher? I don't know. Maybe that's a product of 2019.
As a rookie?
As I was saying, maybe he's more like 39, 42. He's got raw power, don't get me wrong. But there have been years where you have to look and say, geez, there's just too many people challenging history where there's such an aggressive spike in one column. Yeah. Statistically, something's up.
Well, you know what it does? And it's a shame because it makes us not appreciate history as much.
No doubt about it. It desensitizes us to it. 100%.
We don't even think about, like, the numbers, like the home run numbers of the old guy. Man, he climbed to 500.
Mm-hmm.
Man, he climbed to 600. Like, we don't even care anymore.
Watered down.
It's all watered down. And the same thing can be said about basketball and the PER and the scoring numbers. How can you look at the scoring numbers? Because the non-fan will say, man, James Harden averaged 50 points a game. He's not really, but I'm being facetious. Mm-hmm. James Harden averaged 40-something points a game for the 2019 season. He's got to be one of the best players in the history of basketball relative to his peers, 30, 40, 50 years ago. But that's not the case.
It's not.
And the game has changed so much. Really, all the games have changed so much.
Which game's changed the most? Let's get into that coming up.
Yeah,
I think that's an interesting question.
It's a good question because there's things you got to incorporate. And my gut is to say because of the physicality that's been taken out of football, it's that one. But I might be able to be persuaded a different way.
We'll even incorporate hockey. I mean, whether it's, you know, the equipment.
The lack of a goon.
Well, lack of a goon. Everybody's ability to skate, for sure. Yeah. Curved sticks. I mean, compared to back in the day when it was a flat stick, you get no rise. The goalies, I know there's been some modifications, but you look at goalies in the 70s. Forget about the fact they weren't wearing face masks, but their shin guards and their pads, I should say, were so thin. Based on, in terms of width, based on what some of the players wear today, that it was easier to score goals on goalies back then. You have to factor that in. Which of the sports, a great question. We watch sports every night. We love it. We consume it. We talk about it every day. You listen to us every day, hopefully. Which game do you think has changed the most radically? And is it for the good or for the bad? We'll throw hockey in there as well. I know we don't talk a lot of hockey, but hockey is on the table. Which sport has changed the most of the majors? Because right now the NBA looks like something that is unrecognizable. I mean, it really is. 855-212-4227. 1-855-212-4CBS. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line here on Tiki and Tierney, which we'll use in a minute. Phones are lit up. 855-212-4227. 1-855-212-4CBS. Brought to you by GEICO. Great news. Quick way to save money. Switch to GEICO. Just go to geico.com and in 15 minutes save 15% or more on car insurance. And let's face it, I mean, sports always evolve. You flip on the old footage of baseball in the 50s, and it seemed a little slower. While there were certainly power hitters and speed merchants, Mickey could run, Willie Mays could fly, clearly. You know, the game evolved in terms of the middle infielders, you know, a little small, diminutive in stature, bunting, hitting the other way, punch and Judy types. Now you get guys mashing 30 home runs in the quarter in the middle of the infield. So, of course, every sport has changed, but we're curious which sport you think has changed the most. And by extension, is it a good change or is it a bad change? 1-855-212-4227. What's your guess in terms, if you had to speak for the people up front without getting to the calls, which we will in a minute.
What do you think? I'm going to say people will say football, because football has become wimpified in some regards. And that's just not why you want to watch football.
Agreed. I would still probably say basketball, though, based on the proliferation of the big man away from the basket.
True.
It goes against every conventional thought. When you were the big kid in fifth grade, and you didn't know how to dribble, get underneath the basket.
You're right.
The first thing they would get, the biggest juke in the room. You're playing center.
That's good.
Put your hands up. So we'll see what happens. Let's get some questions. Let's get some calls here. Let's go to... All right, Mike is in Palm Springs, 10:10 a.m. Mike is up first, Tiki and Tierney. Mike, what's going on, buddy? How are you today?
Doing good, guys. How are you guys doing?
Okay, what's happening? What do you think?
It's got to be football, and it's for the worst. And the reason I say that is I'm a Saints fan.
Okay.
I started being a Saints fan in the 1980s, 1990s. That's when I really started getting into football. And I loved the team because our offense was horrid.
Yeah.
But our defense was incredible, and you had those big, flashy defensive plays. I can look at it now, and I love seeing Drew Brees put up these 500 or 5,000 yard seasons and Michael Thomas with all the receptions, but the whole way the game is played has been shifted with all these changes about defense.
Yeah.
And now defenses are stifled. Everything's about offense, and you can have an okay defense, an amazing offense, and win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It used to be, if you didn't have a good defense, you couldn't do that. And now you've got guys putting up these insane stats,
all these insane
records. And it's because of the rules, not because the players have changed.
Mike, here's what's interesting to me, though. As a Saints fan, I would think that you would take the opposite approach because
it's benefited you.
Exactly. You went from paper bags to pursuing Super Bowls, man.
Sure.
So how bad is it really for you, Mike, if you think about it? You went from the AFC championship viable.
But he makes a great point because think about college football. So we're talking about the NFL, obviously, but we're talking about sport in general.
Yeah.
But college football, nobody can play defense.
Yeah.
I mean, think about this.
Who can? Utah.
Yeah, it's true.
The Utes.
Utah.
We'll get to that later.
We'll find out this weekend.
We'll get to it.
But think about this. Like in the Big 12.
Yep.
Oklahoma's number one. They're giving up almost 400 yards a game. They're the number one defense in the Big 12.
Number one.
It's crazy.
Wow.
And that's acceptable. And it's just college football is worse than the NFL, but also you see it in the National Football League. Interestingly, though, you know, kind of contrary to Mike's point, a lot of the teams that have good defenses or at least solid schemes on defense are the ones that ultimately do win Super Bowls.
For sure.
And can run the ball. So those principles, that were cliches and like really loud cliches for a long time are still there. They're still the basis.
I agree
for teams that are ultimately successful. Because think about the Patriots last year.
Yeah.
They shut down one of the top two, one or two offenses in the National Football League, something that a lot of people couldn't do to the Rams. They held them to, what, a field goal?
That's true. The two giant Super Bowls. You know, I know Eli gets the love, and I get it. That pass rush was tremendous. The Ravens championship that you played against, even Flacco's team.
Even the second Ravens championship. It was about running the ball and playing defense.
I hear you. Let's go to Sacramento. Carl's up on 1140 a.m. Carl checks in on Tiki and Tierney. What's up, Carl?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Oh, what's happening,
buddy? Well, you're doing well. What's up?
No, I was just calling because I agree with you in saying basketball has to change for the worse.
Yeah.
Just from the era of no more handshaking, which started around the Kobe time. So guys can just shoot from anywhere. You can't touch nobody.
But do you like that, or you hate it, Carl? Do you like that they can shoot from it? Oh, you hate it.
Yeah, you can't like that. I hate it because
you can't really play defense on guys. So if you're smart enough to know that you can't be touched between the three-point lines, you might as well jack up a three.
Yeah.
And then
kick your legs out, and if you miss it.
Reggie Miller was doing that, too, to be
fair.
That's not just the new
school. Yeah, but he was like
thing.
The only one. Yeah, now everybody does it.
He was the pioneer. Carl, let me ask you this. I don't know if this bothers you as much as it bothers me, and I get it. It's part of the DNA of the league now. I hate how often teams switch on defense. Would you fight through the damn screen and stick with your guy? Stop switching every possession. Doesn't that drive you nuts?
Yeah, I hate that part, too, because Once they end the zone defense in the NBA,
I know.
Which also ruined the game. It's like, and I love basketball.
Me too.
Yeah. I'm 40 years old, and I've seen it change.
Hey, Carl.
Where you can actually play,
Carl, this is why Virginia is good in college, because I'm not joking, dude. They play that zone, and they just sink back. And if you can knock down, 50% of your threes, you'll beat us. Mm. If you can. You're not scoring 30.
That's true. Elliot is in New Jersey. He's got us up on SiriusXM 206. What's up, man? How are you today?
Guys, always a pleasure to talk to you guys.
Thanks for calling, buddy.
I even thought of an inbounds, out of bounds question for you guys, but to the sport that.
Wait a second. Hold on a second. Wait a second. Hold on.
Hold on, Elliot. Hold on one second.
I just want to point something out. If we ever did, Mike Francesa just walked into our studio.
Legend.
He's the legend. If I ever walked into your studio when you were on the air.
I asked your producer if I could do it. He said yes.
So if I asked Monzo and he said yes, would you get mad at Monzo?
Well, if you asked me first.
I didn't ask me first.
I don't know if he did. I'll leave.
No, he did.
We owe the pleasure to. Your mic is on.
The reason I did this is because this was the story that you had yesterday. So I just read this on the air. It was given to me, and it's going to be released in a minute. The Sterling Partners and Steve Cohen bought a bigger piece of the Mets. Wilpons will remain in charge, but I'll read you the piece so you have it since you had the story yesterday.
Okay? Go ahead, Mike.
It was your story. The Sterling Partners and Steve Cohen are negotiating an agreement in which Steve Cohen would increase his investment in the New York Mets.
Interesting.
As part of the agreement, Fred Wilpon will remain in the role of control person and CEO for 5 years. Jeff Wilpon will remain in his role of chief operating officer for a five-year period as well. Steve Cohen will continue as CEO and president of .72 Asset Management. That's his company.
That's the one you were just telling me about.
In the Mets will continue to be managed by his family office, Cohen Private Ventures.
Interesting.
We have not been told yet how big the stake is.
Interesting. What does this do for the Mets, Mike?
And it puts a lot of money into the Mets.
It puts
a big infusion of money.
Yeah.
This man is a very big, wealthy investor.
Yeah.
I don't know how big his stake is yet, but it puts a huge infusion of money into the Mets.
Yeah, Mike and I were talking about this right before I came on air.
That's it. Sorry to bother you.
Where are you going, man?
Oh, you're still on the air?
You know, I thought you retired already. You got two more.
Thank you, Mike.
I know you
appreciate you, Mike.
He did have Mike. Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
That's interesting.
That is interesting, and that is good for Met fans.
Exactly. Just for a bit of clarification that Mike and I were talking about, the Mets, a lot of people felt like the Wilpons, they were broke because of the whole Madoff thing.
It actually wasn't the case.
They just couldn't now, after the whole thing and they were under investigation, commingle funds. Right, so they have their fund and then they have the Mets money. They couldn't commingle
it.
And so that's why it felt like the
it
Mets
like it was frozen almost.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that's why it felt like the Mets were broke and they couldn't do anything. And this, in a sense, basically how Mike laid it out, and he's right, alleviates some of that financial
distress
and constrictions on spending.
And it's free. Now that doesn't mean that they just start cutting blank checks.
No.
Now that's a direction we'll see if they embrace. But what it does mean is that they now have the ability to do it.
Yes, that's
so
right.
So there you go. The morning show is calling you this morning. Now they can watch this and they can know that you were right.
They're calling me.
I'm doing my radio tour for my new show tonight. I'm like, guys.
Which we'll get to, by the way.
Yeah, we will. First of all, I didn't even say it. Tiki's the one who said it. What do you want? Leave me alone. Al Dukes is calling me all morning. What do you want, Al?
BT, all I said in a 30-second toss off the last 10 seconds of our show is I know a guy who knows a guy, and this is what he told me. I didn't say it was going to happen, but if it does happen, you heard it here first.
Okay.
That's exactly what we said.
It's on the air. It's on YouTube. It's on TikiandTierney.com. It's on radio.com. Go find it.
Elliot, we apologize.
Elliot. Is he still there? Who?
Yeah, Elliot. We'll get back to you in a second.
That is news that is very hard to measure because the one thing, now the Mets have been putting up, they have changed their philosophy, not financially, but they have cultivated talent. Now, Zach Wheeler just got $118 million to go to the Phillies. He's gone.
Yep.
We know about DeGrom. They have the decision eventually long-term with Noah Syndergaard. You got Alonso, who cranked out 50-plus bombs as a rookie. They're trying to get away from the David Wright, even though a lot of that is for the insurance.
Yep.
But that was a big chunk for them to – they have the Cespedes contract, which has been problematic. They've got young talent. And if the Mets are now willing to start cutting checks to bring in one extra big bat, one real relief pitcher that doesn't cause them to blow nearly 40 saves, I'm not going to say the Mets are going to be the Yankees, but I am going to say this town has a very different baseball DNA all of a sudden. Wow. All right. My man is on point. Never doubted you, brother. Everybody else might have.
I just know a lot of people. That's all.
That's why I was like, wow, this guy's dropping some nuggets here. Met fans, there you go. Happy? You should be. 1-855-212-4227. Tiki and Tierney Show. We're going to get to inbounds, out of bounds. We'll get some of these calls as well, I promise. Appreciate you hanging in. That was interesting news. And we'll get Axe update. We have Kevin Garnett with some choice words for Kyrie.
Wow.
We'll get into the college football rankings. We'll get to that as well. Axe update is right now. Here's Ackman. All righty. Tiki and Tierney here on CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Time to ask the pros. Give you a chance to ask us anything you want. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Here's how we do it. Just tweet us at CBS Sports Radio, at CBS Sports Radio. Use the hashtag Ask the Pros. Listen later on to the show. We might answer the best ones. So challenge us. Hey, it could be about the Mets. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts. All your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every single day. All right, so Tiki and Tierney here on CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM 206, 1-855-212-4227. On Twitter, Tiki and Tierney, at Tiki Barber, at Brandon Tierney. Get to inbounds, out of bounds in a second. College football play rankings are out. We'll get to that coming up next hour. KG throwing a little shade at Kyrie, saying he doesn't have the stones, or didn't have the stones, to play for the Celtics. Interesting. Ron Rivera out. Some residue there. And we'll chat with their pretty good young receiver, DJ Moore. So we got a lot of balls in the air. With that being said, inbounds, out of bounds. Let's go.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. With Tiki and Tierney.
Ah, here we go. He's back. The New York Giants are in, I guess this is the nice way of saying they're terrible. They're in a transitional period. They move from Eli to Daniel Jones, a quarterback, as we know. Now, yesterday, however, co-owner Steve Tisch, you were with Steve at the Bears game.
I was.
Recently, of course, that Giants-Bears game.
It was an ugly watch.
It was an ugly watch.
I tell you.
Giants had the backdoor cover. That was ugly for me. So the door was open for a coaching change, a little bit ajar, saying this to NBC Sports New York's Bruce Beck. We love Bruce. Go ahead.
Do you believe in your coach, and do you believe in your general manager?
Those decisions and conversations are not going to be made this morning. It's really at the end of the season that John and I are going to sit down and talk about all of these issues. But, you know, as partners, we, you know, have to be very honest with each other about where we see this team going into the 2020 season.
All right, translation, pack your bags, it's time for change. So with just four games left, all right? As we reveal yesterday, this morning, that Shermer said that Eli is going to play out of necessity. Daniel Jones got hurt a little bit here. So, which is four games left and two wins under the belt. Wow. In or out. The Giants should let Eli finish out the season and ride off into the sunset.
I'm going to say out of bounds to this. As interesting as this is going to become, BT, because what happens if Eli Manning on Monday Night Football against division rival Philadelphia Eagles just balls?
He might. Eagles stink.
And they put up 35 points.
He might.
And they win going away. And
imagine if the Giants won the NFC.
I'm just telling you.
They can't. That can't happen. The Cowboys have 6 wins.
Yes, they technically
and
can.
And the Eagles have 5. If they win out, who the hell? Go ahead. We'll figure that out after, I
guess. I don't know if they can because the Eagles still. Maybe. I don't know.
The Eagles only have 5 wins. The Giants have 2. If the Giants win all 4 and the Eagles don't win again.
But there's so many common opponents. Like, there's so many division games.
Plus, the Eagles and the Cowboys play again.
Somebody's going to
probably lose out by a game.
But it's going to be interesting. But I'm still going to say out of bounds to that because, look, the transition has been made to Daniel Jones. And if he gets healthy enough, which, in all likelihood, he might not.
I know.
Because he has a high ankle sprain, and now because of Tua Tagovailoa down at Alabama, we know what a high ankle sprain actually is. It's a torn ligament.
Mm-hmm.
It might be worth it to start Eli as opposed to risking further injury to Daniel Jones. But if he's healthy, I think you do have to go back to Daniel Jones, even though I'm going to enjoy watching Eli again on Monday Night Football.
So am I. You know, and I'm so happy it's not some boring game tucked away, one Eastern, nobody watching, or the Jets are on at the same time, which seemingly has happened every week this week, year it seems like. The Jets and the Giants always play at the same time. You know, New York, even the non-Giant fans, are going to tune in and want to watch a champion, hopefully play pretty well. I hope Eli plays well. I hope he has another moment in the sun. I hope he gets a chance to bask in the adulation from Giant fans that he's earned. But my answer is out of bounds because there's two parts here. There's the sentimental aspect, which I just addressed. But then there's the pragmatic, practical side. And it is about the future. And Eli, with all due respect, as we know, is obviously not a part of the future because if Daniel Jones wasn't hurt, we wouldn't have this conversation. I would play Eli as long as Daniel Jones heals. And then I got to get Daniel back in there. Remember, when Sam Darnold went down last year, missed a couple of games, he came back, played even better.
That's right.
This might be a good mental respite for Daniel Jones to get a little oxygen. We know he's got talent, a little loose with the football, but this might be a good thing for Daniel Jones.
It's interesting you say this because we see this often. We saw it with Andy Dalton last weekend.
That's true.
Who was playing terrible at the beginning of the season.
Don't beat the Jets.
He goes and sits down for 3 weeks and he comes back and he played pretty well last week.
He played very well.
And got their first win of the season.
Yep.
Football is fast. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the game itself. I'm talking about the week. And so when you have a game and you're trying to process what just happened, and then all of a sudden, like, you're on to the next game already, the growth should happen, but it often doesn't when you're young and you can't really process it. So to have to sit back like Daniel Jones is going to have to do now because he's injured, it will be a good thing for him, just like it was with Sam Darnold last year.
There you go.
Are you in or are you out?
Zion Williamson's not played this year, as we know, after having knee surgery in the preseason. But rookie, I want to see him play soon. He's supposed to be a phenom, as we know. Finally partaking in light walkthroughs with the teams. Now, reports indicate Zion's likely to debut after the initial 6 to 8 week recovery window he was given and should finally see a little time here in mid-December. So he's on target for that initial timetable return, which, you know, was put out about 2 or 3 weeks ago, whatever it was. Now, the Pels are home for 4 of their next 7, then embark on a 4-game road trip out west on the 18th before coming back after Christmas. All right, so that's the logistics of their journey schedule-wise. In or out, the Pelicans should make sure Zion's first game is at home, not during the road trip.
I'm going to say inbounds, BT. Traveling is difficult. It's, you know, complicated. You're outside of your comfort zone a little bit. And if something should set him back a little bit, you kind of want to be at home. Plus, just as a treat, we know that the season is rebuild and, you know, not really focused on wins and losses for the New Orleans Pelicans this year. Why not make it a treat for the home crowd? So I'm going to say inbounds to this one.
I'm going to say out of bounds. I can certainly get the theatrical aspect of it. Remember the night when they found out they had the first overall pick?
Oh, it's crazy.
They had the ticket sales office. Yeah. They were acting like they just won the championship.
That's right. They were like, yes, my bonus. I'm getting a huge bonus.
Yeah, right? Yeah, no kidding. Or I still have a job. I mean, in all seriousness.
That's a great point.
He may as well. Yeah, I think he saved the franchise. So there's that aspect. You like to reward the home fans, give them a little something after they were done dirty by AD, who basically said, get me out of here. But I believe that, you know, for a young player, there might be even too much pressure to trot him out, an extra unnecessary burden to trot him out at home. I don't need to manipulate the timetable. If he's deemed fully healthy and he clears all the bars medically and it just coincides with a road game, I'm going to play him on a road.
Yeah.
If it means like one game and maybe I give him the one extra game on ice, all right, then I'll play him at home. But if it means sacrificing three or four games, I don't think that's the prudent thing to do. When the young man is healthy, let him play basketball in New Orleans or wherever the schedule dictates.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, Arkansas is a mess in the SEC, as we know. They've gone 1-23 in conference play the past 3 years. Wow. Fired head coach Chad Morris. We talked about that. After less than a full season at the helm, they're lifeless, yeah. Right? I don't know where they go. But one report says that might go to Lane Kiffin or maybe Mike Leach from Washington State. The latter, Lane Kiffin, has gone 25-13 with the Owls, including a Conference USA title a couple of years back. So some real success early and then somewhat pedestrian since, although he does have a shot this year as they play UAB on Saturday in the conference championship game as well. So last year was pedestrian. This year has been better.
Yeah.
In or out, Arkansas hiring Kiffin would be the right fit for both Kiffin and the Razorbacks.
I'm going to say inbounds to this, BT. So I did an Arkansas game, Arkansas-Alabama, and it was interesting because there's some talent on Arkansas' squad, and Jerry Jones' grandson is the quarterback, or he took over as
the quarterback.
He got
some time the other day.
I think he actually is the starter now. There's talent there, but there's just confusion and there's chaos a little bit going on. They brought in some young freshman wide receivers. Trey Knox is one. Traylon Burks is the other, who are going to be studs. But they need a program that has an offense and a coordinator on offense who knows how to take advantage of that kind of high-end talent.
Interesting.
Lane Kiffin is that coach.
Mm-hmm. Right?
We've seen him do it at different places, including Alabama. And so I think this is the right move, and it's also a positive step for Lane Kiffin, because didn't it feel like for a while
yes,
he was just going to languish here?
It was getting a little stale.
And even lower.
Yes.
I think it's the right step for Lane, and I certainly think it's the right step for Arkansas.
You know, I think it might be the right step for Lane. I'm not so sure it's the right step for Arkansas. I'm going to say out of bounds here. You have to have the right personality fit. How many times have we said Eddie Orgeron just fits LSU?
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, Brian Kelly fits Notre Dame.
But what is Arkansas football?
That's part of the problem. I don't know. I feel like Mike Leach would be a better fit, and you want the offensive concepts. You get that as well. Here's the other thing. Mike Leach is older. So eventually Mike Leach, and he's been with Washington State for a while, he's not going to want to jump around. I look at Lane Kiffin. Don't you think that Lane Kiffin is going to want to use Arkansas as a stepping stone, like a stool? Like the first good year they have, he's going to bounce. I don't think he wants to languish with Arkansas forever.
I mean, think if he turns him into a program that's competing against the other teams in the SEC, it could be a destination. I mean, I'm trying to think of the last, like, Arkansas player that was like, man, this guy was a stud. McFadden, right? Darren McFadden.
Darren McFadden was a running back there, sure. He was really good before he got hurt with the Raiders, and then he finished up with Dallas. I'm sure there's been some defensive players we're kind of overlooking top of mind. But, there's not a ton of great pros that jump out to me. It's a tough job for a reason.
Yep.
It's kind of like the old Big East, like when you'd have DePaul or St. John's even, you know, trying to get past like these behemoths with all these deep pockets and the pedigree. It's a tough job. SEC is a tough conference, and that's a tough job.
Tune in next time for another edition of Inbounds or Out of Bounds with Tiki and Tierney.
Tiki, you have any other news you want to break today? Is there any chance the Knicks are going to get sold?
No, I have no idea. I just know a guy who knows a guy,
uh-huh.
And I'm friends with a lot of people.
Yeah, I know you are, and you nailed that. not a prediction, you nailed that report, but please, why couldn't you have said the Knicks? If the Knicks got sold.
That's never happening.
The Mets would never do this. You told me yesterday on the air, as you did.
The Mets had financial issues that were different.
I hear you.
Right? The Knicks are different. There is no financial.
No, I know. I'm just hoping that maybe he'll be tired of losing. And I don't know. If you told me yesterday what you told me about the Mets and it applied to the Knicks, and you were right as you are, and today we're sitting here and it's the Knicks that just changed that whole financial dynamic that we went through before with Francesa, I'd be the happiest guy in the world. I would be the happiest guy in the world. I'm not a Mets fan. Now, I'm happy for Mets fans.
Yeah.
I truly am. And I'm happy for our city.
Yeah.
Because the Mets are good. You know, it's just a better baseball dynamic.
Agreed.
But why couldn't it have been the Knicks? Or the Jets?
It'll happen
one of these days. Get rid of the Johnsons.
It'll happen one of these days, BT.
And you'll probably tell us.
I'll tell you.
I hear
somebody,
you.
Well, somebody will tell me. And then I'll tell
that's
you.
Right.
And I'll tell you.
And you'll beat everybody in the city to the news, like you did.
God, you got so mad at me.
Who cares? You were right. Who cares what anybody thinks? Because people are miserable. That's why. You know that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.